afternoon, good morning, good evening, whatever it may be for you, and welcome to the sixth episode of the Final Boss Blues podcast, hosted on finalbossblues.com. I am your co-host, Keelum, and I'm joined today by the usual group, Raynard Frost.
Yo.
And Despain.
Howdy.
And today we are talking about cutscenes, but before we... Oh, wait. What time is it, guys?
It's player flay time.
Time for a player flay. Today we are going to discuss the game Linus by Blue Period. And this one is looking pretty good. It's kind of more on the serious spectrum. But before I get into that, we are going to read their story introduction. It's a bit elaborate, so I'm just going to read a few key paragraphs that get straight to the point.
I think the movie announcer voice. I think that you should read the introduction before the story introduction, because I think it actually has a lot to say about the game.
Okay, then yeah. All right, so the introduction says, Linus, a project focused primarily on plot. It follows the life of the main character, Linus Milhaven, from boyhood to adulthood. In truth, this is more of a character study than a traditional RPG storyline. There are no crystals to collect, no damsels to save, and no great evil to vanquish. It is simply a chronicle of the life of one person and the world that he lives in. So this game, Linus, you can check out on the RPGMakerWeb.com forums in the project development section, so you can read along as we talk. And to start, we're going to check out the story, which is as follows. Which I think I'm gonna change it up a bit. I'm gonna do a bit of pompous British instead of.
All right, please no, just please. I'm not gonna be able to take you seriously.
Yeah, I'm gonna do it because it fits the story. Just don't worry, it'll be fine.
God damn it!
Go for it.
Just go with it. All right. Linus Milhaven, along with his sickly twin brother Arlan, are the youngest sons of the current Milhaven generation. Despite his young age, Linus is already a burgeoning playwright and novelist. He is a socialite who loves to throw parties for his fellow noble friends. He also dreams of adventure, of sailing the ocean, and traveling to exotic faraway lands. He is highly intelligent in matters of history, politics, music, and art. But this is what. But there is one thing that Linus refuses any part of. War. And getting dirty. But, as they say, it only takes one day to change someone's life forever. Having no choice but to carry out the Empress's wishes, Linus is ordered to attend the Ettenmark Military College, a famed academy known for its brutal and unyielding training methods. Within Ettenmark, pupils must undergo harrowing trials which shape them into capable soldiers and war commanders. It is a place where children are sent to become military leaders, and not many live to see graduation, which is kind of inefficient. During his time at Ettenmark, Linus must fight for his survival while wrestling with his own personal convictions, and will have to endure deadly trials and challenges, scheming rivals and cruel betrayals in order to make it through the Academy's halls with his life and soul intact. Features include a dramatic storyline with nuanced characters and a fully fleshed-out world chronicling the life of the main character from boyhood to adulthood. Detailed and involved pursuits system, which allows the player to experience side stories that enhance the main narrative and offer up special rewards. Completion of certain pursuits affect the main storyline in different ways. Affinity system, which allows for the player to affect important NPCs' behavior. Depending on how Linus interacts with certain NPCs, the storyline will play out differently. Blacksmith system, which allows the player to upgrade weapons in numerous ways. And parallax mapping, with a focus on attention to detail and creating memorable-looking maps. And that is Linus by Blue Period.
Okay, your T's were accented perfectly.
Thank you.
All right, guys. So, I personally think that this seems like it's starting out really strong. My favorite thing about this game so far that we've read is in the introduction paragraph where it says, this is more of a character study than a traditional RPG storyline. And, I mean, for a lot of people, they might not get turned on by that, but when I hear character study, it just grabs my attention. My favorite TV shows, like The Sopranos, they're all about characters. The Sopranos is just, let's get inside Tony's head, study this character for six seasons. And it's mind-blowingly deep. And if somebody can take that kind of approach with an RPG story, like he said, he's following this character from boyhood to adulthood to really grow with the character and see where things go. I'm totally into that. I'm on board. I want to see this succeed. So, what do you guys think about this so far?
It's definitely something that will take a lot of focus and effort to get right. Because with the character study, you run the risk of boring your player. because, as he said, you know, there's no crystals, no damsels, no great evil. It's just a simple collection of events in his life. So what happens?
But there will be conflict.
His...
There needs to be conflict. Or
yeah,
else
there needs
no
to
story.
Be conflict. There needs to be events in his life that are dramatic to the character that he reacts to.
I mean,
so
based on what we're seeing here, I have faith that there is conflict.
Yeah. No.
Just going to be, it's a character study. You go to the go grocery shopping. It's not that kind of character thing.
No, I'm not saying that's what it is. I'm saying that he has to keep that in mind because you run the risk of boring the player if the events that happen to the character are not interesting. It doesn't need to be a huge, elaborate, you know, generic storyline, but the events that happen to him have to be pretty focused.
Yeah, it's really interesting, but you have a very high chance of messing it up, basically.
Yeah. So far it looks good. His mapping is well done.
Well, before we get onto that, what do you think about the story itself? The whole stuff with the academy and being a military college, and he has to go there. What do we think about that approach for a character-driven story like this?
It's original. I like it. It's not like anything I've seen on the RPG Maker forums in general. It seems very focused on a singular character rather than the whole world around him, and I really enjoy how he really set that apart from the rest of the games.
I would say that original is the last thing that comes to mind when I hear the words, you know, military academy.
Yeah.
I'm talking about from a character perspective,
but
just one
but
singular
from
character.
From the idea of the way it's presented, it seems original. But the whole thing,
exactly. It's,
you're with this character in a military academy, and you have to grow up. I mean, the idea of following the character as he grows up is fascinating to me. If the game takes place over the course of years, and you actually watch the character grow, that's really, really cool, because in most games, you're just this one quest, and you're... You know, usually you're 15 years old, even though you're supposedly a great hero. And in this game, you actually have the character develop as a person instead of just as a character, which is interesting.
Yeah, you have your major conflict, which is basically you have this pretty boy, prissy boy, who is thrust against his will into going to into this military academy, and I think, personally, just as a minor nitpick, it shouldn't be because the Empress told him to. It should just be... You could make it more personal by having it where a father figure, where it's somebody he could defy, but he chooses not to just because he's so steeped in tradition.
Yeah, I like the idea of giving the character a motivation to be there other than just do what the Empress says.
Yeah, so but that's just a minor tweak to the story. But the story itself...
And it might even be there on a deeper level that's not actually in the story outline from the beginning. It might be there, we don't know. But yeah. I would say that the central drive should be the character himself to really get us into and give us a motivation for following him and getting behind him and what he does.
Yeah, I agree. The way it's presented is well done. But the story, like the character itself... doesn't interest me personally because I really don't like beta characters, Evangelion. And it's, you know, if I can't respect or admire or associate with the main character, it kind of kills my interest in the story. But the way it's presented and the way, as we'll get to the screenshots in a bit, look, it's his presentation is really well done, so it does spark my interest in that. But so far, his character just sounds like, oh, I like to do these things, but fighting is icky, and I'm just, you know... I just want to punch the face from the get-go.
I like the idea of this character being... He was raised wealthy, and, you know, he's into the high arts and all that stuff. But I've always said that in a story, it's really kind of boring if it's about things that happen to the character and not the things that the character does. So, and the way it's presented here, it kind of happens to him that he has to go to this academy and deal with the trials that face him there and so forth. And I think that as the story goes on, I'm sure that Linus himself will have more of an impact on the story and the direction that it takes. But I really like the idea of being more character-driven, especially if it's a character study, like it says. I think I like the idea a lot more if the character himself is pushing the story along rather than reacting to things that are going on around him.
Well, exactly. going back to Raynor's first criticism about the whole he's beta, I think that's more of a growth trait. He will eventually grow out of that, and you're going to see it happen, which will make it more interesting.
Yeah, hopefully. I can absolutely see that happening, and that will be a really fun development to experience. What do you guys think about the features?
I think half of his features aren't features, mainly dramatic storyline with nuanced characters and blah, blah, blah. You can say that by describing your story. I will judge whether or not it seems like a dramatic storyline.
Well, in this instance, when it's focused on characters, which not many RPG Maker games do, I would kind of allot it a feature slot.
No, no, not a feature slot. Remember, I'm judging this based on it's a game, not strictly an RPG Maker game.
Yeah, all right, yeah.
Saying it's a dramatic storyline, that's well done. That's not a feature. That's what I expect from the way you're presenting your story.
I would say that the last part of that paragraph, or that feature dot, is the important part.
Oh, yeah, chronicling the life. Yeah, that.
Chronicling his whole life from boyhood to adulthood. If it starts when he's 12 and it ends up when he's, you know, maybe in his early 30s, having gone through so much, if it takes place over years and you actually see the character sprite change over time to reflect what's going on, you know, maybe there's like a year later and then you play some game and then there's, you know, 2 years later. Yeah. And, you know, I think that's absolutely worth being mentioned.
Yeah, yeah, no, definitely with that. The chronicling the life, yeah, it's saying follow, but you could say it as gameplay where you could go follow this character's story from boyhood to adulthood.
Yeah.
That's a feature.
Okay, yeah, I can go with that, yeah.
The pursuits system, which seems like a quest log.
Yeah.
But it's still a feature, though. I can see it as a feature.
Yeah, I get it as a feature. I mean, calling it a whole pursuit system seems a little strange. I mean, it's hard to say now. When you play the game, there might be more to it than that. But because the way it's presented here, it looks like a quest log that somehow gets its own name for some reason.
It can be shrunk to where it says, you know, multiple side stories that tie into the main narrative and offer special rewards.
I could say features, and after the dot, it could just say quest log. And then you understand what it means.
Quest log. Like, really, no, but he's saying, like, completion of certain side quests, the main storyline, in different ways. So he could say, you know, as a feature, there's a quest log with plenty of sides, a quest log that features plenty of side stories to blah, blah, blah. But anyways, affinity system, which allows for the player to affect important NPCs' behavior. Depending on how he interacts with the NPCs, the storyline will play out differently.
That's cool, but I don't see the reason to call it a system.
Yeah, no, that's not really a system, as it is just that's how quests work.
It's just good NPC writing, I guess.
He's saying it kind of like in Mass Effect, where your choices affect how NPCs react to you.
Yeah.
To me, that's just, you know, it's interactive dialogue, but...
Yeah, I can see where you're going with that.
Yeah, I don't really see it as a feature, though. Like, I see what he's trying to express, but I wouldn't call it a system.
That would be more in the introduction to gameplay.
I see it as a feature, but not necessarily a quote-unquote affinity system, unless there's some special way that he makes use of it.
Yeah. Yeah, because
otherwise it's just...
Depending on how the player interacts with certain NPCs, the storyline will play out differently.
Yeah,
so
that itself would be the feature.
Choice-based dialogue.
Yeah.
That's all it is, and that's been done in plenty of games. So depending on how he does it, I don't know, it seems... If the blacksmith system to upgrade weapons, that's totally a feature. It depending on how he does it, though.
Like, yeah, how important it is. How big is it?
Yeah, I mean, because blacksmith system has been done in lots of games. You have the very basic bare-bones one from Suikoden, where you just go to a blacksmith, pay money, and your weapon upgrades and the attack goes up. Or is it where I can get different items and fuse them into my weapon, like Dragon Age, and it gives the weapon certain attributes? So
either way, it's still a feature.
No, it is a feature. I just think he should elaborate more about it so we know more about it. Or at least show it in the screenshots. Yeah. And parallax mapping is not a feature.
Nope, not a feature.
No. That can be shown through the screenshots. You don't need to say it's a feature. Just by looking at the screenshots, I'll go, oh, parallax maps.
Yeah, so many games use pre-rendered maps these days that it's not necessary to draw so much attention to it. If you show us the screenshots, we'll get the idea. It's more of a visual thing anyway.
Yep.
Features should be more about the way the game is going to be played than about the way the game looks, because that's the whole purpose of screenshots. So that being said, let's move on to the screenshots. What do you guys think?
Beautiful.
Well, I think the first one looks good. The second one also looks good. I like how when you go to a new area, a little message pops up saying where you are. I'm always fond of that. The third one shows a little bit of flashback with that little monochrome filter over it. And that the level of fog in this screenshot in the flashback looks a lot better than
question here is, what makes you think it's a flashback? Because all the screenshots have some kind of monochrome element to them.
No. Mm-mm. Only this one.
It's
monochrome.
It has sepia tone to it.
Which also comes as a flashback. The first one and the third one do. But the second one,
the battle screenshot, and the last one all have a monochrome effect. It's not sepia. It's not brown. but it has a blue overlay. It has a green overlay.
Monochrome. It's tinted. Monochrome means it's got the Game Boy brownish look over it.
Monochrome technically means black and white with gray.
Yeah.
But in games, it's like the antiquity era. That's what monochrome means.
Yeah. Well, okay, then I used the term wrong. But the point is it comes off as a flashback because it's brown, like aged paper.
Yeah, let's just leave it at that.
The first one and the third one, they are...
I would say there's nothing that really signifies that it's a flashback. It might be, it might not be, but it's not really relevant.
It's all tinted like this, where it is tinted as a brownish flashback color. That's what it comes up as a flashback to me. Also, the last two shots where it doesn't have that filter over it.
It does have the same filter, just with a different color from what I'm seeing it. Like, the last one is very green. The battle screenshot's very blue.
And it's not brown. It's not that monochrome.
It doesn't have to be brown.
Is brown that makes it look like a flashback. That is my point. The brown that makes it look like aged paper, it looks like a flashback. The first one also has that brown filter on it, which makes it look like a flashback.
See, to me, it just makes it look like it's autumn.
Does it? The second one doesn't have the brown. It looks like you're in a cave. It has well-done lighting, a bit too much fog for my taste.
Yeah.
The last two, it has a bit of bluish because it's nighttime and raining. The last one doesn't have much. It doesn't have any coloration filters. The tiles themselves are green because you're in a forest and it looks present day while raining. Although it is slightly tinted, so it looks kind of night or evening-ish. But the one I'm talking about specifically, the first and the third one, they do look like flashbacks because they have that brown tint over them.
We'll have to see what the game creator says about that, where the screenshots
are. This is true. These are just merely my impressions. But I do say that his mapping is really well done. He does a good use of the tiles. It doesn't look too cluttered. There's clear paths. Even his battle system where he's using maps instead of battle backgrounds.
I dig that. I love that.
There's enough room for everybody to move around, so that looks nice.
So far, my only criticism with the map would be the characters themselves, their sprites, because I hate Chibi. I'm sure you guys know that already. But it doesn't match with the overall size of the tiles for me, and it kind of clashes a little bit. That's really my only criticism, honestly.
Yeah, he's using XP tiles and VX style characters, so that is kind of a contradiction. When you're using tall tiles like this, you should also have tall characters.
Again, it's a small thing. You don't have to change it, but it would definitely help out.
The important thing for me about the characters is that they do match color wise though.
Yeah,
like I've seen games where, you know, they have the really dark maps and then they have a, you know, bright pink RTP character and it's like, what are you thinking? But his characters are all really grounded. There's lots of browns, grays, blacks, those kind of earth tones that makes it seem a lot more realistic. I don't see any characters that have, you know, bright red hair, bright blue anime hair. So it works. I mean, the style itself is RTP. You can say what you want about that, but I think that for the most part the character designs and the colors, it's working for the game.
Yeah, no, the coloring choice is really well done. What I have a minor complaint with the battle screenshot, and that's purely just because I don't see the main character in that list at all.
Oh, Eugene?
Yeah, Eugene isn't the main character, but he's being shown. So, and I have no idea who Eugene or any of these characters are. And for the side characters, I don't expect to know who they are until I play the game.
But I like that they have mustaches.
When you're showing screenshots, you should definitely show your main character.
Especially since he's the focus of the story, apparently.
Exactly, yeah. If the story is so focused on Linus, then every screenshot I see should have Linus.
In fact, I don't think we're seeing in the entire thread, we don't really know what Linus's sprite is. We don't know what his face set looks like. I mean, not a single one of these screenshots really says where there's Linus here. I mean, in the second screenshot, there looks like to be an obvious player character. But
yeah, that's Eugene.
It's a dude with a mustache.
Yes.
So
Eugene is being shown in every shot where the character has control.
Yeah, it's kind
even
of...
Even in the dialogue cutscene, it's Eugene again leading the group.
Maybe Linus is a first-person game.
And you're God.
You are the camera.
Exactly.
One more thing I want to mention about these screenshots that I really, really like that a lot of people don't put attention into is the message box, the font, the coloring of it. I love it. I just love it in this game. The menu looks really, really slick. It's really simple. It's just like a plain black box. There's a little bit of a cloud texture on it, and there's a one pixel brown outline to it.
Yeah.
But I think it looks very, very clean, very, very readable. It's not often that you get people using a serif font like this, and it works, but it totally works here. I think this guy, he put the kind of attention into the little things that a lot of people ignore.
I definitely agree.
Yeah,
his user interface is really well done.
It's beautiful because it's so simple and clean and readable, and it makes me want. I think that more than anything else makes me want to play this game, because there are so many games out there that have pretty parallax graphics, but then I look at this game and it looks like he's putting the attention on the entire package, the whole experience, and that's what draws me to the game. It's not just one simple thing that really stands out. It's the entire game looks like a cohesive experience, and
yeah,
that looks pretty good to me.
So well done.
Are we done with the screenshots?
Yeah.
Yeah, and that's
right, so,
the end of it.
So there's not much else to the thread. It says demo will be released in 2013. But one thing I do want to say that I like about this thread a lot, it has a pretty long story introduction, but the focus of the game is story, and there's not a whole bunch of extra stuff to it. You know, there's not like a million screenshots. I would say there's a good amount of screenshots. It's pretty much perfect because it shows off a few different areas without, you know, overloading, you know, the reader with, you know, hundreds of nested spoilers, which I find annoying.
I do think he should add a few more screenshots just to show some of the gameplay features he's listed as features.
Yeah.
Like, so he's got the pursuits menu, which is good, but he should also show an example of his affinity system and his blacksmithing.
Yeah, if it's really a system, there should be a screenshot. If it's just talking to NPCs, that's not too necessary. So, yeah. I mean, it would help us get a better understanding of it. But for the most part, I like the simplicity of the thread itself. It's not just overloaded with stuff that you don't care about.
No, it's clean. It's really clean.
It's very clean, which I love. I love that kind of thing. So, all right, guys, let's wrap up this player flay. What do you think? Let's get our final thoughts and our verdict on this game.
Killam, you start.
All right, I'll go. Obviously, it's a play, if you couldn't tell already. Everything about this game, from the actual thread to the screenshots itself, shows a really high quality. And I would play this game. I definitely would.
I agree 100%. This game looks like a total play. There are things about it that I want to know a little more about before, you know, especially about the affinity system. It's kind of unclear exactly how he's approaching that. But like I said, the important thing to me is that the entire package looks like a single experience. Nothing on its own stands out to me, but what does stand out to me is that the whole game looks solid and consistent, and that's what gets me wet. So I'd say this is a play.
I'm just going to go with this as a flay because it's got a beta character and I can't do it. No, I'm kidding. It's a play.
All right, good.
It's a play. And the storyline I'm kind of iffy on, but it's well presented and the screenshots sell me on it. So if judging on this topic alone, I would definitely at least try out the demo. So that's our player flay for the day, and it's unanimous across the board as a play. This is Linus by Blue Period. You guys can check it out once again on the RPG Maker Web forums. And let us know what you think in our podcast topic, or let him know some feedback on his topic. And today, our discussion is cutscenes, if I'm correct. And
yes.
I believe Killam? No, wait. He's bad. Despade, will you start?
We're going to be talking about cutscenes today. And when I first presented this topic to Killam, he wasn't quite sure exactly what I meant, because there's a wide range of cutscenes. When I said cutscenes at first, he was thinking of the little scene in your RPG Maker game where the characters sit around the campfire and you have to sit through 10 minutes of dialogue boxes. And that's on one end. And I was also talking about the larger cutscenes, the big events, you know, where you have lots of stuff going on and you sit back and you go, wow, this is pretty intense, right? And he was thinking more of those as something else, not necessarily a cutscene. But I would say in an RPG Maker game, we don't really have the opportunity to make the distinction between, you know, in most games, you can't really put in a pre-rendered 3D thing. And if you do, it looks kind of out of place. So I would say that we're going to be talking about cutscenes in all shapes and sizes in RPG Maker. Pretty much anytime you're not controlling the player is what we're going to be talking about today. So, Rainer, do you want to start things off?
Yes, I would just like to start off with saying that from the get-go, all of those things you described are cutscenes. Anytime where the player loses control and story is being told to him, it's a cutscene. Generally, if you're doing a cutscene where gameplay is how you're showcasing the story, those are called IGCs, in-game cutscenes. With RPG Maker, that's pretty much our only exclusive way to do cutscenes, aside from if you're using RPG Maker VX Ace or scripting with previous RPG Makers, you can throw in movies and use those as just rendered cutscenes.
You could put in movies in old RPG Makers, too. There was a show.
Like I said, through scripting
you
or
show,
some other type of
mod. No, there was a in the events, show AVI movie.
Oh, okay. Well,
at least in 2000 you could do that.
Yeah. but I'm talking about the localized
the modern era.
yes, but yeah. So, but for the sake of discussion, the movie ones are an entirely different subject. So we're going to talk about IGC is where it's from, as Killam was thinking, guys sitting around a campfire talking, or the other spectrum where it's these huge elaborate cutscenes. And as far as my opinion goes, I think that the one important thing you have to keep in mind with cutscenes is pacing. Try and keep your storytelling to a minimum so you can keep the player playing longer. I mean, a game like Metal Gear Solid 4, you can get away with these huge elaborate cutscenes that take 20 minutes to 40 minutes because it's a beloved franchise and these are all voice acted and shown off. With an RPG, you want to have your gameplay telling as much of the story as possible. So when you do throw in a cutscene, make sure it has a lot of impact, it has a purpose, and it's interesting. Go ahead.
A good game that does this is the Metroid Prime, the first game. The cutscenes were gameplay. You never actually watched Samus do anything. You did everything. They usually branched off the gameplay for like 10 or 15 seconds to show a map or something, but that's it. Everything flowed. It was really good.
Yeah, like in the very beginning when the spaceship flows in and then she jumps out and it goes straight into gameplay. And that was all rendered in the in-game engine.
That's
yeah,
also a kind of game where there's not really dialogue, so yeah. It's hard to convey that kind of idea in RPG Maker. But it's a good example of a cutscene just going with the flow.
Yeah, well, as far as RPGs go, with the old Final Fantasies, all of those were in-game cutscenes, but they kind of, everything stopped, explain stuff to you, and then you kept going. An interesting thing that I'd like to see done in RPG Maker are interactive cutscenes, where story is being shown or being told to you, but you can still move around and interact. Modern games that do this are games like Half-Life, where you're on the train and you get to see what all of Black Mesa looks like as you're going to your office. Batman Arkham Asylum or Arkham City, the intro where you get to look around. Also, the Riddick games did that, where you're kind of walking along and people are talking and you're getting introduced to this area. But you can still look around and interact with the environment while...
The beginning of Portal 2.
Yeah, also the beginning of Portal 2. But yeah, stuff like that I would love to see in an RPG Maker sense, where you have your story going on, or you have something going on in the background, and you're just but I can still control myself and interact with the environment. I think that would be something that'd be a lot of fun to do. But in general with cutscenes, just to summarize everything, try and keep it to the point, use them sparingly. Just your gameplay should be telling your story more than an NPC sitting there barking at you. But Killam, what do you think about cutscenes?
Well, me and Despain, as you guys have heard, we had a disagreement or a conflict of comprehension about what a cutscene is.
Conflict of comprehension.
I guess that would be a nice way to put it.
Clearly, we have a failure to communicate.
All right, guys. All right, thanks. But basically, once in a while, you will have those dialogue-heavy cutscenes, and there's really nothing wrong with that if they're used sparingly, but there are ways to make that better, and you can make use of this through action or custom graphics. Graphics as small as just a character turning his head to the left or someone laughing, those frames can add so much flavor and depth to a cutscene, and they're so simplistic to add in, and people seldom use it, which is kind of disappointing. And also, putting action into dialogue-heavy cutscenes, again, you shouldn't do it all the time because once in a while your characters will want to just talk about what's going on. But
I would say that you should always put action of some element into every cutscene.
Like 100% of cutscenes, every single cutscene.
Well, if it's long enough where you have to consider it, do it.
Well, yeah, but not every cutscene. Like, your characters...
No, he just amended his statement, where if you're sitting there, and this cutscene's pretty long, and you're like, I wonder if this will be boring, put some action in.
Yeah, if you start to think, might it be boring, it will be boring. If it even crosses your mind that the player might get bored, the player will get bored, and you have to put something in there. And I don't mean action like you have to put in a whole battle in there. I mean action like if the characters walk around a little bit, have them walk far enough where maybe the screen can move with them. Just move the setting move the game itself so the player isn't just sitting there pressing the space bar over and over again, not reading the text anymore because he's bored.
Or, you know, have them go pick up an item that they're talking about, or just be like, hey, you need something to eat? They go and they're sitting there cooking in the corner while they continue to talk. Yeah. Little bits and pieces like that.
Yeah. All right, because I thought you were referring to just, like, guns or, like, explosion or something. I'm like, that
no, action no, 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 no. Action isn't something that breaks up me spamming spacebar for talking.
Oh, yeah, I agree. Just, like, something simple, like a conflict of interest with another character or something like that. Yeah,
a shove. You'll have a you'll trigger like a push sound, and one cutscene just slides away a bit. Stuff like that.
Yeah,
yeah, I agree entirely. Then yeah, that was my mistake then. But yeah, so use custom sprite animations, even the little ones, make a huge difference. But I also want to talk about big cutscenes, or as I like to refer to them as cinematics. I know you guys don't like that definition, but with the RPG Maker engine, you should definitely outline a cutscene before you make it, as in write everything out, not the dialogue, but how you want it to progress, and then do an outline of how you want everything to progress. Like, for example, in my game, I have a train cutscene, and I have how it's going to start. Like, you're going to run out of a supply depot, you're going to jump on the train, you're going to overtake the train, you're going to ride the train, like that kind of stuff, and then you let it flow out. But you also have to consider the limitations of the engine that RPG Maker has, and I think, Despain, you want to talk about that.
I just wanted to add one little thing. As you can either do an outline for it, or you can try making storyboards. Storyboards would help out a lot, because you can actually do a quick sketch of how it should look, and then make notes about it.
I was going to mention something similar to that when I go on to it. But first I was going to say about Killam's cutscene with the train. I was going to talk about ways where you could do similar things in RPG Maker, and how you can show large-scale events happening and keep the player invested. When you have something going on where there's a lot of action and movement, the perfect example is a train cutscene. You know, if the characters are on top of a train and they're fighting and stuff, you can take advantage of RPG Maker has a lot of great features for this, like using your parallax backgrounds to show a fast-moving background. Yeah. I've even done things where if I have characters running and talking, like in one of my old games, Sandfall, I had characters on horseback, you know, dinosaur back technically, and they would be running around, and I would use the sprites, and I would keep them in one place, but I would use the loop map feature, and I would just have the whole map itself scroll really quickly behind them, so it looks like they're moving if they're not. And there's ways to cheat these kind of things in RPG Maker that puts a lot of action into your cutscenes. And then, like what Reynard was saying about outlining with a storyboard, I want to talk about how you choreograph event movement. Like, say you have a complex battle scene just between two characters, right? And you have a character with a sword or something, and they're, you know, running around and they're fighting each other. If you get yourself a piece of graph paper and you draw on it the movement for each one, figure out exactly how they're going to go, it's easy for you then to take that information and put it into RPG Maker, into the move routes, you know, move up, move up, move up, you know, spin in a circle, move back, move back. And you can choreograph these characters together into something that looks really cool. It has to be done really tightly for it to work, and you have to make good use of sound effects and animations to really pull it together. Like, if you just have two characters sliding around next to each other, it's not that impressive, right? Like, anybody can do that.
Yeah.
But if you take the time to really make it look like they're actually fighting, there are ways to do it without editing the sprite itself, but I would strongly suggest take the time. If you can't do it yourself, maybe have a friend do it, or look, you know, make a request for it. Just little interactions, like, you know, a sprite edit where the character swings a sword, something really small. There's ways to get around it. Like, you use your battle animations, but you can't use a full-on battle animation in a cutscene. You have to shrink it down. This is kind of an aside, but it's completely relevant to what we're talking about here. Whenever I have an RPG Maker project, one of the first things that I'll do is I'll make a new battler graphic, and it's just a character sprite. It's just a little 32 by 32 pixels character sprite, and I'll put it into the database, right, as a battler, because then you're able to use it when you're making battle animations in the database as a guideline to create battle animations specifically to show on the map and not in the battle. And this is a good example that we're talking about here of choreographing event battles. Like, say you want to make a sword swipe, right? An animation of the slice animation.
Yeah.
You can't use the same one that you're going to be putting into a battle because it's going to look huge and really, really fucking weird on a map.
Yeah.
But if you tone it down, make it small, and put it right next to the character sprite and use that as a scale reference, it can look pretty slick in-game. It'll actually look like stuff's happening, and it'll look realistic, and it'll make sense. And if you combine that with the right sound effects, the right move routes, and even the right sprite animations, you can have something really slick and really impressive. And when people are playing your game, their eyes are going to be glued to the screen.
Yeah, I was actually really impressed with the choreographing idea you had. Like, I never thought of that with the graph paper, and that it would really help make your events seem more realistic, because I usually just try to act the events out in my house. Like, I'm jumping out with swords and everything to make it seem realistic. But that, I'm doing that from now on. I'm really impressed with that idea.
Yeah, definitely having stuff on graph paper. I also think practicing dialogue, saying it out loud, when we were talking about dialogue in a previous podcast, trying to plan out as much as you can when you're addressing scenes. I mean, as a minor side note, off topic but slightly related, is when you're making a game, get your gameplay solid, because otherwise you're going to be remaking these cutscenes over and over and over as you make changes. You may spend a few days making one cutscene and then realize down the road that your game changes to a point where you don't need this cutscene anymore. So you have to be able to take the time to plan out these cutscenes and implement these cutscenes, but also realize that these cutscenes you may not be able to keep and you may just have to get rid of, or at least put into a cut or director's cut box, but they won't make it into the full game.
Yeah. Kill your darlings, right? There's that idea in writing that don't be afraid to kill things, to cut things out, just delete them straight out if they're not progressing the story. And that's totally the same thing, you know, when you're making a game as it is in writing. Don't be so attached to what you're making that you're not afraid to delete it. Because every little scene, as much as you love it, it's not as important as the entire experience.
And adding to what Raynard said about the whole outline, don't make your outline super specific to the point where you're actually writing out what the character will say, because again,
unless that's your style, unless you have to. I mean, some people have to do it different ways, but
I like to write out my dialogue on paper, just because. Well, when I initially write dialogue, I write it in a novel format, so I can kind of just get an idea, and then I say it out loud, make some changes, and then I put it into the engine, and then depending on how the format of my font and how much space I can get into a chat box, I edit it again, and then I say it out loud again, and I just keep polishing it that way into the dialogue.
It's
time-consuming, but I think it makes for better dialogue.
But in a novel, like, you have a very broad base to choose from. When you just have a written dialogue, that's all you're going
to
put in.
Yeah, that's why I said I edit it multiple times until I get it refined to where it fits the game. I'm not saying I just write it in novel format and then I slap it in the game.
Oh, okay.
No, I edit it so it fits.
Oh, yeah, then I agree completely.
Yeah.
on the topic of dialogue in cutscenes, I would say keep it to a minimum. Not necessarily a minimum of text boxes. I mean, as much as people hate just pressing the space bar, I would say the idea is keeping a minimum of the explanations and the long-winded text boxes. Like,
show
I would much rather have three text boxes. Yeah, I would rather have three text boxes in a row, each with one line, than I would have one text box that's just a full paragraph. Because, I mean, you see it on forums, you know, wall of text. I don't want to read that, you know. It's just, you can get lost in it. It doesn't feel like it's moving, you know. But
you
if you're playing a game and you have a few short sentences after each other, it can keep it flowing, it keeps you into the mood, and it feels more action-packed. It feels like there's more of an urgency in what's being said.
Yeah, you definitely want to keep the phrasing down to a point where you make it seem natural, like something somebody would say out loud. You wouldn't have somebody sit there describing something through multiple paragraphs.
Yeah.
You just sit there. It's how you or it's how any one of us would talk, where we just we want to talk about something, we react to something. We do it usually with a one-liner. We don't sit there and express how we feel about the situation paragraphs on end, unless you're beta, like kill him. But
or like Legend of Zelda Skyward Sword. You know, after a cutscene just happens, Fee comes out and explains exactly what just happened, except she puts in a few random number percentages. That just annoyed the hell out of me. Like, I don't need an explanation of what I just saw.
Yeah,
like
I just
that
saw
kind
it.
Of thing. I don't want.
There's a 75% chance that Zelda's been captured. I know. I just saw her got taken.
Exactly. And you want to avoid that kind of stuff in your game. You want to avoid the, you know, when you're writing, they say it's called the as you know, Bob. You know, where people are saying things for the benefit of the reader, of the benefit of the player, but it makes absolutely no sense for them to be saying it to each other.
Exactly.
Yeah,
so
show, don't
show
tell.
Yeah.
You're not going to have...
Show, don't tell, yeah.
You're not going to have a character like, oh, I got stabbed. Just have him be stabbed. You don't really need to have the guy say he's stabbed.
Yeah.
You could have a reaction thing like him just go,
Yeah, but he's not going to be like, oh, I was stabbed in the stomach by a sword.
Oh,
I just saw you got stabbed. No shit.
Don't do that huge thing. But I just wanted to jump back to the deleting everything or accepting the fact that you may have to delete these cutscenes. With with a personal experience with my own projects, as I said in a previous one, previous podcast, where I had my intro and it was essentially done, but then I just deleted all of it because I wanted to redo the intro in a way that would make it better and more concise and more interesting from a gameplay aspect. So
yeah, you and your three intros.
Yeah, exactly, dude. I've made around three intros.
Yeah, exactly.
I was just like, all right, this one's not good enough. All right, this one's slightly better. This one's slightly better. Eventually, you have to have a cutoff where you just go, nope, this is it. But
that leads me to something else I wanted to talk about for our next subject in this discussion is cutscenes in terms of intros and outros. Like, you know, at the beginning of the game, you have a cutscene usually, and at the end of the game, you know, after you beat the final boss, there's a cutscene there. And what are your thoughts on those compared to, you know, the regular cutscene in the middle of the game? Should they be different? Should they be special? How should the pacing be? Is it acceptable for them to go long? What do you think about those?
I have a rule of thumb with intros of any game. And that is, if it has been 30 minutes and I have not touched or messed around with core gameplay...
30 minutes even seems long for me.
No, yeah, this is purely for, not any game, but for RPGs, where it's, if I'm not in the full swing of things by the first 30 minutes, your intro is way too long.
Well, not and full swing, not, that's, like, completely...
No, I'm talking about full swing. Like, I have at least been able to touch all aspects of gameplay. Look
yeah,
at
like
most combat.
If you're not playing the game, like, you know, there's playing the game, and then there's actually playing the game, and that's what you're talking about here.
Yeah, I'm talking about... You know, look at Super Mario Brothers. You got you got a couple minutes, and then you're jumping and hitting things. Look, Final Fantasy. Within the first 30 minutes, I've been in a few battles. I've bought some items, and I'm going on to my next. And I've walked in the world map. I've gotten to see the core aspects that this game has to offer. I'm not saying you have to introduce every single gameplay feature, but I'm saying I at least got to use and have fun with the core gameplay within the first 30 minutes.
All right, then I agree. I thought you were talking about like a lot of the gameplay features, which would be
no. I'm not saying like you have to play the card game. You have to do this and this. No. I'm saying you have to be able to get to core gameplay within the first 30 minutes.
So
if you play your game for 30 minutes and you still haven't been able to use your core gameplay, your intro is running way too long.
All right, yeah, I agree then.
And what about the introductory cutscene?
The introductory cutscene itself, I would say, you like we said before, we don't want to jump with scrolling text. You want to try to avoid it. Not saying that you can't use it at all, but you want to try to avoid it if possible. But with an intro cutscene, you just want to introduce the characters, introduce the scene that's going on, get straight into conflict, and then let the player have gameplay. Like what we were talking about before, when we were talking about when I brought up Final Fantasy 1 and 2 Dawn of Souls, how you could have made the intros better by having just in Final Fantasy 2 where... They're in this town. The town gets attacked. You are like, who are these guys? And you wake up and you're just all, my friends are missing. I got attacked by these guys. What's going on? You're already invested at that point. What do you think, Killen?
All right, well, intros and outros, I think they do have a little leniency to them. They shouldn't actually be like normal cutscenes because, again, like you said, for the intro, you need to establish the characters first and then you can have regular cutscenes. But that intro needs to establish... a setting first before you actually get into gameplay. And outros, again, I feel outros are like you closing the book once and for all, so you should have that extra amount of dialogue to show that everything is complete. So again, intros and outros I look at a lot differently than actual cutscenes, even though they
I think outros can be elaborate too.
Yeah. That's what I was gonna say.
At that point, once I kill that final boss, I'm just sitting back and I'm like, all right, tell me what happens. When you get to the outro and you've beaten the game, I think at that point, or at least me personally, the player wants to have story told to them. They want to go, all right, tell me what I just did.
Yeah, that's actually what I was going to say. For your intro cutscene, right? Like, you want something really quick. It establishes what's going on, and then boom, you're playing the game. And
yeah.
And when I mean playing the game, I mean playing the game. Our primary criticism with X-Noir last week was that the introduction didn't grab you. And Raynard was saying he wants 30 minutes before you get into the game. But I would say even before that, the introductory cutscene, start the game off with some action, right? Get the player moving. Give the player some stakes, you know? Not stakes in the food, but stakes as in he's fighting against something, right? Like there's a conflict. There's a conflict. You have something to lose. Give the player a reason to want to play the game right off the bat.
Exactly. Yeah. A good example was Final Fantasy VII's intro, where a huge cinematic vista of where you're going to be in, and then a train pulls in. As soon as that train pulls in and you get the song, you get to see a few characters are. You are the main character jumping off. You get into fights right off the bat.
Yes.
After those fights, you get introduced to characters. You get to pick the names of your party members. And you get to through this whole intro, you're getting to be introduced to both gameplay and the story at the same time.
Yeah.
So
it goes cutscene right into gameplay, and then there's a little talking and stuff. But you're playing the game right off the bat. You're not waiting around, and the stuff is going on is the important part, right? Stuff is actually happening. It makes the player say, wow, I'm invested, I'm interested, there's action, and I'm a part of it. And that's the important thing for an introductory cutscene to me.
Exactly.
And I was going to say, I agree with Raynard on the end cutscene, too, that where your introductory cutscene should be as short as possible to just get the player into it, the end cutscene is the opposite. It very likely could be the longest cutscene in the game, especially if you overlay your credits over it. My favorite example of this is the end credits for The Legend of Zelda Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask, something like that.
Or Link to the Past.
I haven't beaten it.
Oh my god. Okay, the ending to Link to the Past is basically they're showing the credits, and it's probably similar to Ocarina of Time or Majora's Mask. Zelda has not changed their formula, but in Link to the Past, they just show the different areas you've explored and what happened to the people. Like, in Link to the Past, on Death Mount in the Dark World, there's this demon kid kicking a rubber ball kid around. And then, during the credits, you get to go to Death Mountain in the Light World after all of this has been, after you've saved everyone, and you just see those kids chasing each other and having fun, how they look in the Light World. And you could see Kakariko Town being prosperous again, the king, and Princess Zelda's doing her thing. Lots of fun stuff. It was well done. They weren't telling you things. It was just showing you what had happened through these cutscenes.
Yeah, it's a way for you to say goodbye to the world. Like, in Ocarina of Time, you see all the characters that you've interacted with, and they're having this huge party at Lon Lon Ranch. There's a bonfire. Everybody's dancing. And the idea is that it's a reminder of your entire journey so far, and it's a reminder that you triumphed personally. And that because of you, all these other characters in the game, they're living their lives, they're happy. What you did was worth it.
Exactly.
And before that, I mean, that's the kind of cutscene you'd have underneath an end credit. Because, I mean, you don't want to sit there and be forced to watch 10 minutes of that unless, you know, there's another purpose of it, right?
Yeah.
Like a secret ending at the end.
Yeah, but I mean, before that, the cutscene that's going to end your game with your actual characters, before it shows, you know, the overall influence on the world, the larger world, there's a lot of room for you to do things with it that have heavy emotional impact and a sense of relief.
Kill everyone!
And that's your opportunity for, you know, the heavy-handed stuff. Because at this point, the character is just beating the game. I mean, throughout the game, you don't really want to hit the player over the head with a lot of, you know, with a lot of stuff that might seem a little lame. It might be too story-oriented.
The central theme you want to go with your ending cutscene is you want to tell the player the consequences of their actions.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's the opportunity that you finally have to go all out, because the player is definitely going to be watching it. He wants, at that point, like, holy shit, I beat this huge boss. I'm going to put the controller down, and I'm going to relax and watch this and reap the fruits of my labor, right?
Yeah, that's the central point. There is no more gameplay after that last boss, so you can go a little overboard with the cutscenes, because he's not going to pick the controller up again. There's no point.
Yeah, I mean,
you could have a little bit of gameplay, but at the same time, it's at that point, it's just the game is over. This is what you did.
I mean, I do like the idea of a potential new game plus or extra quests, but that's a different topic here.
Yeah,
that takes place after the outro.
Yeah. So, Anything else for you guys? What do you have to say about cutscenes in general? Anything that we've missed upon here so far? I mean, this is a deep topic. It feels to me like we could easily have another episode about cutscenes in a different, you know, looking at them from a different angle.
Yeah, with a different approach, yeah.
Yeah, I mean,
we have barely scratched the surface.
Yeah, but in terms of general cutscene stuff, is there anything else you guys want to talk about before we go to our final thoughts here?
To regurgitate the point, is your intro should be brief, to the point, get into gameplay as soon as possible. Your outro should be elaborate and
Could be. That's where you have the opportunity. It doesn't have to be, but that's the opportunity where you can let yourself go with it.
I just think that your outro should be elaborate to let me know, basically close all the loose ends that you don't want to carry over to a sequel. It's just let me know who I helped, what the consequences of my actions were. The more I get to see of what my actions caused, the happier I get at the end of a game.
Yeah, like you get the little reminder, like, I remember that NPC. I gave him his ball of string for his cat, and now I see his cat on a rooftop, and they're playing, and I did that.
Yeah. It's like, that wouldn't have happened if I hadn't helped him. That's great. It's a great game.
And especially if you, in RPG Maker, if you use your conditional branches and switches, you can actually literally put that into the game where, you know, it wouldn't happen if you hadn't done it, and the player would really feel rewarded for it.
Yeah, so that's another thing to keep in mind, is keep your ending cutscene in mind when you're designing, like, side quests and stuff.
When you're designing your ending cutscene, keep your side quests in mind. I would say the other way around.
Yeah. you know what I mean! Aside from that, with cutscenes, my main point is to just keep with your intro, keep it short and concise. With your body ones only, they're like seasoning. Sprinkle them just at the right place to enhance flavor. Don't put too much on, or it's just going to burn out everything. And then your outro, just let it all hang out. Kick ass and take names. Yeah. Kellen, what do you think?
In closing or in general?
In closing.
All right, well, making a cutscene isn't easy. It's hard, but it's fun if you do it correctly. But you can employ a lot of tactics. I'll stress this again. The custom graphics, the little face animations, the laughing, put those to good use because they can really add to your character and add to cutscenes in general. And
for a good example, play Final Fantasy VI.
Yeah, like, what is it? Or Final Fantasy V, when Gallif, he always laughs, puts his hands at his hips, goes ha ha, like that kind of stuff.
Yeah, exactly.
That adds a lot, not only to the cutscene, but to his character as well. Yeah. So, yeah, add those. It doesn't take a long time. You can have one of your friends do it. Add those little Despain, he charges money, though. I don't know if you want to ask him to do it. But add those little animations. They don't take a lot of work, and it really adds a lot. So my closing statement would be definitely focus on cutscenes a lot through animations, and don't go easy on them. Make them an actual part of your game, not just text.
Yeah,
definitely try and add as many little details as you can.
Yeah, for my final thoughts on this subject, I really want to say, Raynard, I fucking love that analogy about the seasoning. You just want to sprinkle your cutscenes here and there. Don't keep them too long. Don't bore the player. Do not bore the player.
I'm playing him to have fun and be entertained.
Yeah.
I do not want to get bored.
Nobody wants to just sit there, press the space bar, over and over and over and over again. Just, you know, while characters rattle off text. I mean, take advantage of the tools that you have. Use the move root event command. You know, use a lot of sound effects. Use the battle animations, like I said. Shrink them down. Put them in there where they make sense. And just allow your cutscenes to be a visual experience, an audio experience. Don't just make them read. I mean, rereading's fine. It's necessary. It's in the genre that we're working with. But it can be so much more than that.
And that's what
I have to say about cutscenes.
Show, don't tell.
So, Raynor, what else we got here?
Last week we asked a question for the audience called, how do you implement exploration in your games? And we got some feedback. Indra from RPG Maker Web talks a bit about having a set of optional subplots that affect which ending the player will get, as well as having the ability to unlock lore and character interactions through this. Lunarea says she loves exploration and achievements, and she also talks about the challenge of adding extra areas when using pre-rendered parallax maps. But she also points out that the good thing about extra content is that it can be added after the main game is done. And that's a very excellent point there. Chad Sexington talks about the restrictions of adding exploration in a game that's strictly linear. He implements special treasure maps and makes use of a hub town before the end of the game, and makes a good argument for the stop before the end game and do side quests by saying that it makes sense for the gameplay because the players are at a high level and it's a good opportunity for let them to take all that power they've acclimated and put it to good use.
Yeah,
so story-wise,
we talked about that last time, right? Last time we talked about exploration.
Yeah, we said, well, this for the story doesn't make sense, but that, he does make a point. That's to where you sit there and go, well, video games.
Yeah.
because video games. Every so often you're going to be working on your game and you want to try and explain as much as you can for a story related reason, but at some point you're just going to have to sit there and go, because video games.
Yeah.
No, that is a very, very strong argument, and I actually agree with him entirely. That's a very good point.
Yeah. I like what Luna Rea said, though. A really good point to keep in mind is that extra content can be added after the main game is done. You should focus on your core gameplay. Get, you know, the alpha of a game is getting your point A to point B complete. Get your beginning to your end where it's the main story, the main gameplay. You get that working and functional. It doesn't have to be perfect or pretty, but it just has to be functional. And then your beta is where you get to add the pretty graphics, add the extra gameplay features, add all this stuff, and polish everything. So
yeah, add the extra maps for the exploration.
Get the core stuff done.
Yeah.
But yeah, so I believe and that was our last week's question. So this week's question, Despain, will you ask that for us?
Yep. This week we talk about cutscenes. We talked about a few examples of cutscenes in our games. And my question to you is, what's your favorite cutscene that you've made in a game of your own, and what do you think makes it unique? What kind of cutscenes have you made that really stood out from other RPG Maker games? What kind of things are you proud of? What did you do that you want to share with us, and we'll share on the next podcast? So I'm pretty sure that's all we have for this week. Killam, you want to take us out?
All right, everyone. Thank you so much for listening to the 6th episode. Make sure to leave a comment, and you can do so either on the forum topic, which is on RPG Maker web forums, or the actual website, finalbossblues.com. You can also shoot us a message on Twitter, which is @finalbossblues, and if you want to talk to Reynard, you can follow him as well, which is @ReynardFrost. And make sure to leave a comment about the question of the week. You can do so again on the aforementioned areas. And we are also on iTunes if you guys wish to follow us as well. So this has been Killam,
Reynard,
and Despain.
And thank you again for listening to this week's podcast, and we'll see you all again next week.